So now, if you guys want to come back up here, and Michelle, and sit with Lindsay. Try and point out a couple of things and then throw it open to discussion from a kind of perspective of the three talks that might be able to engender some sort of, but I mean starting off with the truth and realism and the concept of what actually integrity of realism is an interesting one just to break down, because we're in a situation where we're really questioning what realism is, and the idea that one's identified anything that's real is problematic at different times. And this then, using this as a historical evidence, becomes interesting to start to work out how we actually then interpret this ongoing question of realism. And then with the, you know, I really love the sort of notion of two parts to the eye with, Marais. And I'm also interested in this, you know, the notion of the high-speed camera and what is infinite speed of the camera, and how when we get to that sort of point, because we thought that 500 seconds was fast one time, and now we think. So it's a kind of interesting, and I had a, but I, you know, like Deleuze's concept of infinite speed and chaos at speed in, I think, I could be wrong, I'm not a Deleuzian scholar, but the take on which I think I looked up was the idler, which is something that's maybe really interesting to look at in relationship to the image. But then the taste of history came along as a sort of semblance of realism, in a similar way to rubbing. It's almost the notion of licking. I was wondering whether the taste of history is a similar to almost a rubbing of history, as a visualization, as a sort of internalization of the kind of history. And so I thought there were really interesting, kind of strange parallels between these, you know, as a sensory thing of, and then this, in the middle, this questioning of what constitutes a machinic temporality, which is the human consciousness, the eye, the image can get there quicker, into the eye, and the eye can see it. In other words, before you can think about it, it's actually there in your head. It's partly that notion of the infinite speed of the eye that brings that to bear. So, there were just some thoughts to try and pull those three together.
That was very impressive.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought we were all over the place.
Yeah.
I was trying to find these links, because we're trying to put these things together, so there was some kind of connection between that, whether it's the archive or whether it's this, or whether it's some kind of relationship with the database. And it was hard to bring that ship to business in. But I just, that taste of history. There's another comment you made, you know, I was a hippie when I was young. And you are what you eat was the main thing that came in at that point in time. Everybody was going macrobiotic, and that you could change your life by the way you ate was a really big thing. And it just died away, you know. Went back to me, it was all the drugs or something. I don't know. So can we open up those some questions now? We will have a break then after those questions, and there is some food that we've got, and we haven't unpacked it. So you all have to help unpacking it. And there's some wine as well, so you can all come back slightly drunk after this. Whoa! Okay. Any questions for the three or one? Josh.
Thank you to everyone. That was interesting to hear some things about your things you're working on. I was pretty curious, Lindsay, with yours. So with the Anzac and the fried bread, I understand there's historical interest in that. with the prepper one, that's very anticipatory though, isn't it? Because they're all about prepping for the future. So are you, because you mentioned a lot about some speculative attitudes you're taking, are you more interested in the historical context or the anticipatory context?
Well, the Hertech has a really long history that's really varied, and it's pretty much about military aggression and colonialization. And the preppers really fit in with that more. Like, they're also generally, like, aggressive, more or less white supremacist settlers. So I think there's, like, a cultural continuity between all the spaces where we live with rations like this and some of the futures they're imagining. I don't really see them getting out of those mindsets that much in the way they talk about that kind of horrible future that's coming that they need their bug out bags for. I think that's pretty much a horrible future that's informed by a horrible history, and that there's a real continuum there. I think most of the speculation I'm doing has to do with the decolonizing potentials of some of these foods, and that we might change our nutritional environment or our nutritional landscape, kind of similarly to how the macrobiotic people were doing things, but maybe not with the same amount of food feelings.
I'm going to
We can put it in a little, let's try it. It's better with water, like people would use tea, but we can start with cold water. We'll just fill half of it. It's like a science experiment. And at the end of the symposium, we'll check on it.
I'm just wondering, with globalization, of course, you find that certain cultures, their foods that have dated back a long, long time have changed. And I'm thinking of Mexico, for example.
Right.
I mean, I remember traveling to Mexico in the early, mid-80s. And the taco there was nothing like the taco that you'd have in the States. But now, of course, you've got the influence of the States on Mexico, so there's now, they have a huge obesity problem. They didn't have an obesity problem before the American influence of, for example, the taco. Are you going to be thinking about issues like that?
Well, Mexico and South America is really interesting because that's where this very strong movement called the decolonizer diet is based. So a lot of people of Mexican and South American descent who live in the US have noticed that the American diet is causing health problems. And so decolonize your diet is all about eating like native foods and place-based eating and stuff like that. So yeah, Mexico's really important for me. And also, another project I did earlier that kind of informed this one was about the pinyon pine, the pinyon nut. So my family is Mexican-Irish, which is really common for obvious religious reasons. But that's like a really common like mixture in the Southwest, and so we inhabit the same geography as this tree, the pine tree, and the pinyon nuts that are edible in that region are like a starvation food. So I'm really interested in those indigenous starvation foods and in situations like the Donner Party, where they cannibalized each other while they were walking through an incredibly nutritionally rich environment because they didn't understand that there was like an edible food everywhere around them. They ate each other instead, which seems like the ultimate like taco, like that's like one step beyond your taco example, just like cannibalism.
Just one step.
Yeah, it's a big step. But yeah.
But also, I can't help but you're talking about decolonization. I mean, surely we also have to respond to colonization by genetically modified food and fast food. You know, is this not colonization of diets globally? Sorry, I mean, I know you're aware of that, but it's like a scary dimension. If it was bad in terms of military biscuits, it's even worse now.
There's that bland fried baseline.
This is sort of very fuzzy here, but I'm trying to get up a conversation between Michelle and you, Lindsay, around, if possible, and around what's going on at the actual level of the sensory and perceptual, rather than, I'm not saying that it's able to be siphoned off from, but if we just foregrounded that rather than histories of a moving image or histories and futures of taste. What if, I guess what I'm trying to do is just to say, if you just concentrate on the camera scene and the actual taste, where can you go with that? Like, where, without kind of wanting to leap into the other historical, contextual, social, what is it, what do you think it's possible to do just with that perceptual?
Thanks, Anna.
Yeah, sorry. I know that's really complicated.
I know how to talk about that
without it being divorced in its context or anything like that, or deframed or anything like that. But in that point of seeing or in that moment of tasting, what is the event?
Well, see, my first thought when Lindsay started talking was immediately, what does this taste like?
Yeah.
It was that kind of moment of trying to have a kind of sensorial experience of like, I wonder what this is actually like. And so it put me in that sort of kind of immediate moment of the sort of, without having the experience, the sort of that kind of, I guess that moment. And obviously, yes, of course, a lot of my kind of research outside of our practice does look to kind of histories and, histories of cinema and movement and stuff like that. But in its kind of, for me, in the immediate moment of our work, and look, this is the thing that we're exploring with the new project, is that because I spend a lot of time in the water, and sometimes when you sort of take a step back from that and you kind of think about like experience and stuff like that, one of the things that I often sort of thought about is that moment where you're just in the water, you're not surfing or anything like that, you're just actually hanging around in the water, and you might see a wave coming, so you dive, and sort of what I and / we became interested in is like, well, what is that moment where everything changes, from the above, the experience that you're having, to this complete and utter altering of all of your senses in a way, and it's on one level it's so simple and so you've all done it, you can even pop your bath and put your head underwater and you've done it in a way, but because it's generally that moment is there and it's gone so quickly, threshold of it, if you like. For me, it was about thinking, well, how can we sort of, live that moment in a way? And so without kind of, going back to its histories, trying to think of a way but looking at those histories to think about how technologies can work now, trying to think of a way that can we actually have that moment in any other form other than just, putting people in the ocean. Yeah, and it's not to say that that's actually what, for example, our new work will do, but I think it challenges. I think it challenges a moment of going under going under a wave anyway. So that's me.
I might ask if we can, unless you've got something really.
I want Lindsay.
Oh, right,
I feel like I talk a lot, but I'll just quickly say I was really interested in slowness as one point of connection between the two kind of sensory events that we're interested in. That's kind of slow camera or those very, like, or that journey of your camera who seemed like a little buddy, you know? But I think slowness and the slowness of grain and the way that grains have slowed down, there are all these narratives about grain slowing civilization by like their long growing cycle and the agriculture and the shift into agricultural time that they affected. And I think that taste is both a very fetishized kind of event and also a very under-theorized event. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to something bland like wheat, it's very under-theorized. There aren't that many adjectives that we apply to wheat, like versus a lot of more exciting kind of spicy things. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's maybe because like it's that kind of unmarked whiteness default thing that you don't even have to talk about because it's like everywhere. But yeah, I would have gone to kind of slowness or that idea of like a really slow growth or slowing down time through some of this tasting.